barn, guys.
Blog Talk Radio.
Evening. The G-Men do it again. They slay another dragon, another giant, 37-20 over the Packers. And they just absolute dominant performance by the Giants. They outplayed the Packers basically from start to finish. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. Hit me up on facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. Or find me at CyrilGeraldQuinn.com for any post any comments, questions, questions that you may have. Also, for my Blog Talk Radio audience, as always, I am on the chat line. The poll question of the night is, with the Packers out of the way, who is the favorite now amongst these final four teams to win the Super Bowl? I would think probably people would lean towards the New England Patriots, with the betting, with the Vegas odds. But, as we've seen, the two teams that I thought were the best in football coming into the season are both gone, and in terms of the Packers and the Saints. And of course, we're going to begin with this giant game. And listen, I was absolutely just dead wrong about this game. I mean, I didn't think the Packers would blow them out, but I thought the Packers would have a nice 10-point victory. 34-24. 31-21, and the Giants just came in and took it to the Packers physically. They came out right away with the drive, which took a ton of time off the clock. Even though they were only able to get a field goal out of it, it kind of set the tone for the entire game. That the Packers, the Giants were the more physical team, and I said at the top, this is what the Giants do. The Giants have made a history in terms of their franchise of taking out these big-time offenses and these big-time teams. I mean, we saw it in Super Bowl 25 when they did to the Bills. You saw it in the three-peat game in San Francisco against Montana and Jerry Rice and company. You saw it against New England a couple of years ago when Patriots were 18-0. Giants have made a habit of doing this. Second time in 4 years that they take out the Green Bay Packers as a number one seed in Lambeau Field. You beat Brett Favre, future Hall of Famer. You beat Aaron Rodgers, best quarterback in the league. And you can't get the Giants enough credit. I mean, they went out there, and to me, when I'm looking at the MVP of the game, there's not one single player that I would single out. I mean, Eli played great. Hakeem Nicks had a great day. Umanora had a great, two sacks, had one of the biggest plays of the game. But to me, the MVP of the game, and I look at the difference in this game, was the Giants secondary. I mean, the Giants secondary swallowed the Packers receivers whole. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, listen, the Giants ended up with four sacks. But for the most part, I thought that the Green Bay offensive line did a good job in terms of pass protection, considering that he had to throw the ball 46 times. I mean, four sacks, 46 throws, that's not too bad, to be honest with you. And a lot of those sacks, a couple of those sacks were late in the game. But I thought the Green Bay pass protection was pretty good. Look at the Green Bay receivers. I mean, when you look at their stats, and I'll give them to you in a second here. Don Driver, 3 catches, 45 yards, did have a touchdown. They had 2 big catches, by the way, on key third downs that kept Green Bay in the game. You had Greg Jennings coming back from the knee injury, 4 catches, 40 yards. Jordy Nelson, 3 catches, 39 yards. Randall Cobb, 3 catches, 38 yards. Jermichael Finley, 4 catches, 37 yards. And that was basically it. I mean, James Jones had 1 catch for 16 yards. I mean, the Giants secondary was the story in this game to me. I mean, they took away the deep part of the field. They kept everything underneath. You had Aaron Rodgers, you know, having runs, you know, had a couple of runs because there was nobody else to throw to while you're trying to defend, you know, while you had linebackers dropping back in pass coverage. You had, a bunch of dump-offs. I posted it on my Facebook page, you know, the Giants secondary has been dominant, and they were dominant. Now, you can talk all you want about the Green Bay Packers, their receivers dropping 8 passes, and you know, certainly we will get to the Green Bay aspect of this, because I think that Green Bay clearly was not sharp by any stretch of imagination. But first, you obviously have to give the Giants all the credit in the world. Coughlin, you know, they bury this dude every single year. Every year, Coughlin should be fired. And he finds a way to rally the troops and get his teams, you know, ready to play football. I know they had missed the playoffs the last couple of years, but the last couple of times that they've made the playoffs, you know, 2008 when they lost, you know, the Eagles, you know, Plaxico Burress, that whole ordeal, that sucked the air out of their team. And of course, what they did in 2007 when winning all the games on the road en route to their third Super Bowl championship. Coughlin has his team, you know, one of the more mentally tough teams in the league. That's all there is to it. I mean, there's no way that when you look at the Giants this season that you said that you would have thought that they could beat the Green Bay Packers in a divisional playoff game. If I'd asked you back in November, late November, early December, could they beat Green Bay in a divisional game? First of all, you'd be like, you know what, the Giants aren't even going to be in the playoffs. But even if they do sneak into the playoffs, no, there's no way that they're going to beat a Green Bay team that had been basically the best team in football for about, you know, 75 to 85% of the season, for the better part of the season. You know, even though that their defense struggled over the course of the season, even though that they had Aaron Rodgers taking the 3 weeks, having 3 weeks off, coming into the playoffs, Green Bay to me was still the favorite to win the Super Bowl. Now, they were not the prohibitive favorite that I thought they were, say, back in, around Thanksgiving, and you know, so, but there's no way that I thought the Giants could get to this point. You know, the fact that they won this game is not as shocking as the fact that they're playing for the NFC Championship, that they're one game away from the Super Bowl. Because I thought the Giants coming into this year could make the playoffs and then, you know, maybe be a one and done, or maybe not even make the playoffs. I did not think highly of the Giant team coming into this season. As far as the Packers go, listen, this is why you have to have the utmost respect if you're a football fan for what the Broncos did in 97, 98, the 49ers did, the Steelers did, Miami Dolphins. Going back-to-back is just, I mean, it's boring. It's almost impossible. What the Packers, you know, did back in the 60s and what have you, it's just hard. I mean, everything has to go right. Think about it. Packers last year go 10-6, barely make the playoffs, get hot, and win the Super Bowl. This year, you know, they start off 13-0. They're rolling, okay? End up 15-1. They lose Greg Jennings. Now all of a sudden they lose Greg Jennings, chink in the armor. Aaron Rodgers, they sit Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has 3 weeks off, clearly wasn't sharp as we've seen in the season. You had the offensive coordinator's son just tragically dying earlier in the week on Monday. You know, those things just, you know, take so much out of you, end up taking so much out of that football team that they by the time they got, you know, to game day today, they just did not have that, you know, they just were not sharp. They were not in rhythm, had no rhythm offensively. I mean, you had guys dropping passes. Aaron Rodgers had 20 incompletions. Aaron Rodgers, you know, his season high for incompletions was 18 against the Giants, and that was not his fault. That wasn't because he was off. That was because guys were dropping passes and left and right in that particular game. This game, guys were dropping passes, but Aaron Rodgers was off. I mean, he just was not on his game. I mean, he missed to Michael Finley with a wide open on a third down conversion. That was a big part of the game that, you know, they ended up having to turn the ball over on downs. Wide open on a third and five, he missed to Michael Finley. He missed Greg Jennings for a touchdown on their first possession when it was 3-3. Excuse me, when it was 3-0, that would have been a touchdown. These are passes that he never would have, you wouldn't even dream of him missing in, you know, over the course of the season. And if you want to look for a turning point in this particular game, again, there were two huge plays. The Hakeem Nicks play to make it 20-10, which was inexcusable. I mean, if you're the Packers, you can't give that up. Ahmad Bradshaw runs for 23 yards and gets out of bounds. So he picks up the yardage, he gets out of bounds, and the Giants had no timeouts left. And then Nicks makes a tremendous play off bad defense by the Packers secondary. And, of course, the Usei Umenora strip on Aaron Rodgers when it was 20-10 that was going to be a touchdown. I mean, Jennings had really turned the cornerback around, was wide open, and more than likely would have been a touchdown to cut it to 20-17. Those are the two biggest plays of the game. But to me, the turning point of this game was when Mike McCarthy, who had a rough day overall, went for an onside kick at 10-10. I'm saying to myself, Mike, it's 10-10 in the first quarter. You just tied the game. You have some momentum, and you go for an onside kick. And what that tells you is, you know, what that tells you is that he lacked confidence. And, of course, he won't come out and say it, but he lacked confidence in his own football team. When you are the favorites, okay, when you are the defending Super Bowl champion, when you're at home, you're 15-1, you know, and you're feeling good about yourself, you don't take risk like that. You don't take gambles like that. You know when you take gambles like that, when you're an underdog in the Super Bowl, like New Orleans was against Indianapolis, onside kick the beginning, and when you feel like, you know what, we can't get Peyton Manning the ball coming at, you know, after halftime when they had just scored before the half. That's when you do that. And even that was a risk versus reward. That was a gutsy call, one of the gutsiest calls in Super Bowl history. So that told me, at that, you know, when McCarthy made that move, I said, you know what, Green Bay's going to lose this game. And it was 10-10. They were in pretty good shape. I said, you know what, they're not even playing well. It's 10-10 at home. They're going to get their sea legs eventually, and they're going to win the game before the onside kick. But when he went for that onside kick, I said to myself, he doesn't believe in his own football team. And it made no sense, logically. It made zero sense because, number one, your defense has been awful. You get the Giants a short field. Okay. And number two, you know, it just number two is way too early in the game. You still got Mike. You still got three quarters left of football to go. You still have three full quarters left. You know, slow down. I mean, that's no time for a panic move. Onside kick, that is – you know, that's a panic move. You only onside kick when you in the NFL normally when you have to. So that told me a lot about where that game probably was going. Again, hard to repeat. It goes without saying. We've seen it, you know, year in and year out. This is, you know, now, you know, it's been, you got to go back to 2004 to find the last time a defending Super Bowl champion even made it back to the conference championship. And that, of course, was the New England Patriots, who ended up winning back-to-back Super Bowls. You know, Giants, when they won a Super Bowl, you know, out the first round, out the first round the following year, Saints out the first round in the following year, and now the Packers out the divisional playoffs this year. First time ever, a little bit of history here, first time ever that a 15-1 team has not won a playoff game. Now, of course, you remember when the Vikings were 15-1, they got knocked out by the Atlanta Falcons in that 98 98 NFC Championship game, but they did the week before that, you know, take care of business against the Rams. I think against who did they beat that in that conference, that divisional game. I forgot actually the Cowboys. Let me get that right. 13 years ago against the Cowboys, they knocked them out and needed a divisional game. So you know, listen, things have to go right almost perfectly to repeat, no matter how dominant you are in the regular season. And just give the Giants all the credit in the world. They've come together at the right time. They've gotten hot at the right time. And they will square off against the San Francisco 49ers come next week at Candlestick, 6:30. The NFC this year has a late game at 6:30. It'll be 49ers and Giants in a rematch of a game earlier this season in San Francisco. Very good game, by the way, that the 49ers end up winning. Just getting started here on this special edition of the NFL Wrap-Up Show, post-game edition, as the Giants take out the Packers 37-20, their second straight victory, playoff victory in Lambeau Field. Eli outplays Rodgers. He outplayed Favre in 2007. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk about the game earlier in the day. Baltimore and Houston, so we'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the NFL Wrap-Up Show. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the NFL Wrap-Up Show, post-game edition, as you just watched, of course, the Giants defeat Packers 37-20 to advance to the NFC Championship, first time since the 2007 year when they ended up winning the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots. First game of the day, pretty good defensive battle. Ravens take out the Houston Texans 20-13. Ravens force four turnovers, get 17 points off those turnovers, and basically that's the only reason why they won the game. And obviously, turnovers, you know, are the difference, especially in these playoff games. But the Ravens, to me, I walked out of this game more impressed with Houston than anything, because you look at Houston, and you know, they lose Mario Williams. They lose Liner. They lose Schaub, of course. They're down basically to, you know, third, fourth string quarterback. Okay, a guy who was a fifth-round pick in T.J. Yates, and he had a rough day, three interceptions, rookie quarterback. No shock, especially against the quality of defense he was playing against. But they were right there. I mean, that game was absolutely for the taking. As we're going to be joined by a guest of ours, Mr. Sapp. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. Just got finished watching these games.
Yeah, you're doing much better than the Packers.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I have to give Rob credit. He called this game, and for the reasons why the Packers lost the game, it was one of the reasons why he called it, based on the fact that they just did not look. And I said at the beginning that they just did not look sharp whatsoever. Offensively, and of course we know that their defense have been bad all season long, and give the Giants credit for taking advantage of it. They clearly outplayed the Packers. The Giants secondary to me was the MVP of the game. Packers wide receivers were just a non-factor. I think Driver had the highest output as far as 45 yards and a touchdown. So that gave you a sense of how dominant the Giants secondary was. And, Eli Manning, he's elite. I didn't mention that at the top. But now, the guy's in – he's a great quarterback. That's all there is to it. Is he better than Tom Brady or Rodgers or Breeze or what have you? No, he's not as good. But he's an elite quarterback. That's all I can say, basically, considering what he's done over the course of his career, especially this year. What are your thoughts?
What Eli does, Eli just gets it done. I sit here and I look at him, and he just kind of has that look, and just kind of like I've heard it described as like the aw shucks look, and he just kind of like but he just gets it done. He makes the plays that he has to make to win the game, and the commentators kept saying it this game. That what he did was now he cut down on the mistakes. He cut down the turnovers, and that was what was killing them. What was killing him last year, and this year he minimized those. And we know Eli can make big plays, and that's what he does, and that's what he's proven to do. As far as elite, he's as close to elite, he's right there. I think I need to see like another championship run. Not even winning the Super Bowl, but getting the Super Bowl. I'm anxious to see what he does next week against San Francisco's defense.
Well, the reason why I say he's elite, I'm looking at his body of work, and I'm looking at what he's done as far as in the playoffs. I mean, obviously he owns the Super Bowl, but look at the quarterbacks he's beaten in the playoffs. He beats Favre when Favre had an MVP caliber season at Lambeau Field in that overtime game. He beats Brady when Brady had, up until that point, arguably the greatest year of any quarterback in history with the 50 touchdowns. And now he beats Aaron Rodgers, who pound for pound, from my estimation, is the best quarterback in the league, a guy who certainly has a chance to be a future Hall of Famer, stays healthy, defending Super Bowl MVP this year at Lambeau Field. I mean, that's taking out the heavyweights. You're taking out three absolutely superstar heavyweight quarterbacks. Two of them on their own field, and one of them, going for an immortal season.
Yeah, I mean, your argument is very good. I'm almost there.
Next week could put him over the top. That's a fair deal. Go out there, win. Beat Alex Smith. Beat the, against that 49 defense, which is great. We'll get to the 49ers in a second, a couple minutes here. And that was a classic game. Oh my goodness, that game.
My nerves were bad after that game. I was like, I was like, I can't. I don't know if I can. If the Patriots and thank goodness the Patriots just whooped on the Broncos, because I don't think my nerves could handle anything else after that game.
I had to come down after that one, but Eli. I think Eli is elite. But next week he can take another major step if he gets this team to a Super Bowl. Because I said earlier about the Giants, there's no, now, obviously, this was a winnable game. I didn't think they were going to win. But even more shocking is the fact that they were that they're at this point, considering what they looked like in October, in November. I like this team. Like they just look like a mediocre football team. I mean, not mediocre, but just they look average at best, inconsistent and average. And I say it's amazing that they are at this point.
Inconsistent one game away from the Super Bowl. Yeah, inconsistent is the correct word, and
yeah, inconsistent.
You know, there is I mean, we saw it last year. There's something to be said for just just getting all your pieces, getting it back. UC Umeora, getting him back at the right time. You know, just kind of getting that ground game, at least having both backs in a kind of like the healthy rotation. It all gels for him for them. At the right time.
Yeah, and I mentioned it at the top of the show. Now, you said you came to the game late, so you didn't. Did you see McCarthy call the onside kick at 10-10?
Oh, I saw everything. I saw everything. I have DVR, so
I got you. I said, now there were two big plays in the game that you normally would look back on. We do a segment on the show or a part of the show called Turning Point of the Game. And normally I would have said that the Hakeem Nicks touchdown before halftime was a turning point to make it a 10-point lead, or the Umanora strip on Rodgers when that would have been a touchdown that would have made it 20-17 would have been the turning point of the game. To me, the turning point of the game was Mike McCarthy with the onside kick at 10-10, because that told me that you don't have confidence in your own football team. I said, what the hell? I said, I text you. I can't say what I text you, but WTF, you guys figure it out. You texting geniuses, figure that out. What, I actually could say it, but I'm not going to say it. But what are you doing? I said, when you are the superior team, or when you think you're the superior team, you're 15-1, you're at home, you don't trick anybody, you don't go for these outlandish calls or play calls or trick plays. I said, at that point in time, the Giants are going to win this game.
He coached and they played like they were the underdogs. And you heard it all week long. The Giants just kept sounding off to the point where it almost sounded like, overconfidence. Like, I hope they're not too high on this game. But they played exactly as as they sounded from the entire week. They were the confident ones. They were the sure ones. And Green Bay just played and coached like they were the underdogs. And just to piggyback off of that point, you're absolutely right. You cannot put your team in that position that early in the game when you're the favorite, when you're at home, when you have, you have the perception of being the best. You can't do that. There's no reason to do that. It just showed me that he was kind of coaching. He was coaching scared a little bit.
Yeah, it absolutely. I mean, neither one of the onside kicks made sense. I mean, even when he got it to 30-20, you had three timeouts, 4.5 minutes, 4:44 left, 2-minute warning. I didn't like that one either. But I can understand that a little bit more than it being the fourth quarter. But the first one, when you just tied the score at 10, just one of those just mystifying calls that I will never understand. As long as I watch football, I'll never understand that. Before you came on, I was just talking about just how hard, and this is why you have to respect repeat Super Bowl winners, just how hard it is to repeat. Like, you can actually come back better the following year and not make it nowhere near as far as you did in your championship year. Green Bay last year struggled to get in the playoffs, 10-6, got hot. I thought by the time they got to the playoffs that they were the best team. But still, they had to go out there and do it, got hot, win the Super Bowl. They come back this year with people healthy and everybody healthy. Though the Nick Collins injury ended up being a huge injury. It was – you can't be understated. That dude is an all-pro. People don't realize. He's been three-time second-team all-pro. And in terms of how many passing yards, there's a reason why they set the NFL record for passing yards allowed. And Nick Collins was a big part of that defense. So that was a big-time injury to that secondary. But they come back, 15-1, they're cruising along, 13-0. Yeah, they had the hiccup in Kansas City, but they win the final two games, putting up 40. But, you had the Jennings injury. They probably should have given Rodgers that last game in Detroit, at least for a half, to kind of knock some of the rust off, to give him some type of rhythm going to the playoffs. They, you know, the Philip death to his son obviously had an impact in terms of just messing up the routine. Football players are creatures of habits. We all know that.
Yep.
So everything seemed to, like, come apart at the wrong time for Green Bay in this last month of the season. They just could not overcome that and also run into a hot Giant team, just it was like a perfect storm of things to go right for the Giants and to go wrong for the Packers.
Yeah, I was sitting here, I was thinking about it, about the New Orleans game and the this game right here, Green Bay and the Giants, and an analogy came to my head. I don't know if anybody's ever watched kind of professional wrestling, but there's a move that's called like the figure four. You put the figure four on somebody, and you got your opponent in a position where they're going to submit. But the way to reverse that is to kind of turn over. And when you turn over, the person who actually put on the figure four is the one who has the pressure. I say that to say, in both of those games, when I was watching New Orleans and when I was watching Green Bay with these high-powered offenses, you could see as the game went along and as they weren't scoring, that did put pressure on them. And you could see the quarterbacks getting really frustrated and kind of really trying to go down there. With Drew Brees, you saw him force balls. With Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay offense, they just couldn't ever get into sync trying to press that. And so these high-powered juggernaut offenses, you know, if they don't get going right away, that not scoring, not kind of being in that rhythm, that almost puts pressure on them to where they compound the mistakes. Green Bay at the very end of that game, yeah, I get it that it was, you know, they were down by, you know, three scores. But at that point in time, you would think a well-oiled machine offense like that would at least have confidence that we're going to score, and hopefully our defense can make a play. But that offense just looked completely done because all the pressure was on them to score. When the pressure's on you to score, that's when it can break down, and that's what I saw the commonalities between those two games.
There's no question about it. We were going to get to it later on the show because I posed a question on my show on the Saturday morning wake up call yesterday. Does defense wins championships? Is it now reversed where offense wins championships and sells tickets, and defense can just win games? It is clear to me after watching these games. I didn't think I was going to be able to complete that question in just this weekend's set of games. But now it's complete to me because three of the four teams that are left are playing very good, are playing great defense. Only New England remains the offensive juggernaut. Saints out, Packers out, all these records and stuff. Look
Detroit.
But the bottom line, Detroit, yep, you can throw them in that mix. The bottom line is, Give me franchise quarterback first. Give me the franchise quarterback. But if I can't get the franchise quarterback, I'm going to build up my defense to at least be able to, number one, stop people and keep me in games until I can get that franchise quarterback. And that's what San Francisco has done. And we'll segue to that game because just one of the great fourth quarters that you will ever see in NFL playoff history.
Ever.
I'm watching this ever. The best 4 minutes ever. The best 4 minutes to end the game ever, without question. I'm watching this game, and, it looks like, first of all, it looks like a classic avalanche game for the home team. The way San Francisco comes out, they're getting turnovers left and right. It's 17-0. I'm like, oh, San Francisco, they're going to run away with this. But then, you had the turning point to me where New Orleans gets San Francisco holds New Orleans holds them to a field goal on the last drive to make it 17-0 instead of them getting up 21-0. Hold them to a field goal, 17-0. New Orleans gets the touchdown, gets back to back touchdowns. Halftime, they're going 17-14, and I'm saying, you're New Orleans, you're feeling great because you just put the ball on the ground left and right, and you're down by 3 points. You know, you're
they
down
got
by three
all
points.
Kinds of bullets, yeah.
Right, yeah, right. And then, you know, San Francisco gets a field goal to make it 20-14, you know, and 20-14. And the third quarter, to me, the third quarter took forever because, like, it was no action in the third quarter whatsoever. It seemed like at the third quarter, San Francisco gets a field goal to make it 20-14. In the third quarter, the game just completely just stalled.
Yep.
Like, if you could have, you could have almost not taken a nap, but the game just stopped almost. I mean, teams were punting, and it was, you know, defenses started picking up a little bit on both sides. They started getting to Alex Smith. Then we get to the fourth quarter, and it's like, you know,
the
it reminded
break.
Me. Yeah, it reminded me of the Super Bowl with New England and Carolina.
Carolina, yeah.
Defense, defense, defense. Then all of a sudden, the offense just went nuts in the second half. And I'm saying to myself, like, what in the world? You absolutely have to give, you know, San Francisco all the credit in the world. They basically, you know, I said, you know, talk about the great defense versus great offense. Look, I mean, San Francisco's defense forced 5 turnovers, so they did play great from that standpoint. You turn somebody over 5 times, that's great defense. But Drew Brees threw for 466 yards. And the Saints, again, had over 500 yards of offense and put 32 points on the board. If you had told me that before the game, I'd be like, there's no way. No way.
Although, here's what I would pause you on that. If you had said that before the game, and you would have told me he had 35 attempts, maybe 40 attempts, I would have said, "Oh, that's a win." But if you tell me Drew Brees attempted the ball 62 times or 60, I know it was over 60, 61 at
no,
last
62.
Count.
I think
was 63. It
62? Yeah, 63.
It's 63. If you tell me he does 63 attempts, I'm not liking that. That would give me pause. Go ahead.
I think you're right from that standpoint. But if you told me that they put 32 points on the board,
yeah,
I agree. That was the whole thing about San Francisco. I didn't think that they could put that they could like. I didn't think that they could play a game in the 30s. Excuse me, with New Orleans. And listen, their defense forced the 5 turnovers, which ended up winning them the game, but their offense made every play that they had to make in that fourth quarter. I mean, Alex Smith, I texted Chad, and Joe Montana, and they're making plays left and right. Vernon Davis is, you know, all world, you know, making every catch known to manageable, and I like their offense, as great as their defense played as far as forcing the turnovers, their offense put them over the top and won that game.
I agree.
That's a strange, crazy game.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I think there are a couple of takeaways that I have coming out of that game. One, Harbaugh is the real deal. That team is so well coached from offense to defense to special teams. It's just ridiculous. Two, that 49ers defense is physical. The first two hits, people went down. Jimmy Graham didn't recover. I want to say this to you and to whoever is listening. Jimmy Graham had a concussion. He was fuzzy through that first half.
Yeah.
He didn't
first
get
half.
Right into the second
to
half.
To the third quarter. No, he didn't get right to the midway to the third quarter. Yeah.
Midway through
got
the third quarter.
Touchdown pass. He got right at the right time. But that to me, and I didn't, you know, if I go with a turning point in that particular game, there was so many different plays and the action with the fourth quarter. But to me, the turning point in that for the whole game was the first hit, Dante Whitner knocking out Pierre Thomas. That
yep, and then
the
Pierre Thomas.
First of all, you knock out one of the top running backs. You prevent them from going up 7-0. Okay, so you take away a score. And then you say, you know what? You better bring your hard hats today because we're hitting. I'm like, can the Saints? I'm like, they were fumbling. The Saints were fumbling like on every other play. They were getting the hit. I'm like, gee.
The third thing I took away is that Harbaugh and Peyton. I mean, I give Peyton credit too. those two coaches just the word I want to say I probably can't say on air are just they have guts for days. And I think that's why that game was so great, because you saw two coaches who go for it, you know. And that last play, you know, I don't think the Saints ever thought that San Francisco was going to actually pass that ball. And for Harbaugh call that pass at that very end, you know, I just stood up and applauded. I was rooting hard for the Saints. I wanted a Saints-Green Bay matchup. But the way that San Francisco played that game, and especially that end of the fourth quarter, I just stood up and applauded for San Francisco. I said, you guys got it. You wanted it, and you got it.
They just say, yeah, both NFC teams, the underdogs, outplayed the favorites clearly. It wasn't flukish. It wasn't, you know, the crazy miracle play.
Nope.
No, they outplayed them from start to finish. Same game, obviously, was a little bit closer. But, both underdogs outplayed the favorites. And it's funny because all year long, we said, you know what, the AFC is wide open. AFC, we know who the AFC is. And now here we go. AFC, you got top two seeds. AFC, you got number two versus number six. So, basically NFL playoffs is like, you know, flip a coin. Like, it's gotten to that point now. And I'm looking at it's gotten to that point. We're going to get to the other two games. It's gotten to a point where it's just like a team gets hot, then that hot team has a chance to win it all. And the regular season, I'm not going to say it doesn't mean anything, but we've seen so many of these teams with these gaudy records, whether it's Indianapolis in, you know, 2000, pick an Indianapolis team, 2009, you start out 13-0, 14-0, you know, with the Patriots, Patriots, they've had years where they're 14-2, they're unbeatable, 18-0. These teams with these gaudy records, they look great in the regular season, but somehow, some way, whether it be an injury or whether, you know, circumstance, they get exposed in the postseason. So, I mean, it's really kind of like, it's gotten to a point where the NFL is like, almost like baseball, the hot team, the hot pitcher, the hot quarterback, the hot defense, where you have to look at where momentum is absolutely a factor going into this postseason.
Yeah, I hear this said every time I hear it associated with the NFL. It just sounds odd, but it truly is a tournament. And, you know, it's like, it's a much smaller tournament than the NCAA, but literally, upset. You know the upsets are coming. You just don't know where. In today's NFL, somebody's going down. One of these top favorites are going down. Possibly two top favorites are going down somewhere. You just don't know where it's happening. But a truism is, you know, throw those records out the window. One or more of the big boys are going down.
It's basically gotten to a point to where now I think in the NFL, and we're going to get to the Baltimore-Houston game as well, just get me to the playoffs. And I wanted two things. Get me to the playoffs, and I want, no, most importantly, because Houston is a testament to this, I want to be healthy, number one, and get to the playoffs, and I want to be healthy. If I'm those two things, I'll take my chances, whether it's, you know, home field, whether it's on the road, whatever. Just get me to the playoffs healthy.
Yep.
And you look at Houston and Baltimore, which was a good game, defensive game, as we expected. I walked away from this game thinking to myself, you know what? Houston could have been in the Super Bowl. I said, Houston, I probably was more impressed by Houston. I was absolutely unimpressed by what Baltimore did. Now, they can go out there and beat New England next week, possibly, you know, cause that's just how the NFL is. But I'm looking at it, I'm like, Houston absolutely outplayed Baltimore on both lines of scrimmage. Aaron Foster runs all over the place. I don't think they had a sack on T.J. Yates. Baltimore defense. And, you know, the four turnovers were all the difference, but I'm looking at that Baltimore offense. I'm like, Baltimore's offense, it was horrible. Joe Flacco, oh, God, he's not that much better than Sanchez.
I was having a discussion with my brother yesterday, and we were going over the odds of the Patriots in Baltimore. He had already assumed Baltimore was going to be there, pretty much. So had I. So we were going over the odds of the Patriots beating Baltimore, and I said, you know what, you can say as much as you want to say about everything, and I will hear it, and I will, you know, and I'll take it all in. But at the end of the day, who do you trust, Brady or Flacco?
I think
Flacco does something that warrants him warning the, you know, that warrants having confidence in him, I'm going with Brady every single time, period.
I will say this about that. That game will be an interesting game from the standpoint of their defense matching up with New England's offense. I'll say this about that. New England basically played a scrimmage last night. Basically, it was a scrimmage against Denver. And I wonder if that just wasn't too easy. Because it's going to be like, you know, as bad as Baltimore played, they still, you know, they survived. That's the whole thing, you know, survive in advance once you get to this point. As bad as they played, they do match up better against New England than maybe they even did with Houston, with how physical Houston was with their offensive and defensive lines. Houston's defense is legitimately a big-time defense. That defense, they're right there with San Francisco as being one of the best defenses in the league. Matter of fact, I'll put San Francisco 1, Houston 2. I mean, J.J. Wyatt and Joseph, and they've got some, you know, Cushing and Ryans. They got some boys. They were knocking Baltimore all over the place. But I think that's a close game. I obviously get the home field, you know, from standpoint at New England, Belichick, the whole nine, Brady. But that'll be a very interesting game, because what New England did to Denver should be illegal in 25 states. maybe illegal in 50 states, because that was just, and they actually, for once, they actually were nice, because they could have put 70 on the board. They put their foot on the gas after that last touchdown, because they I guess they were smart to be like, listen, let's not get any injuries and let's save ourselves for next week, because we're going to have a physical battle. If it's Houston or Baltimore, it's going to be physical. So they were smart from that standpoint. But what they did in that particular game, it was so easy. You know, next week is going to be like a complete 180 in terms of physicality, in terms of just the level of play. I mean, because Denver, let's be honest about Denver. With Denver, first of all, overachieved to a level to where I haven't seen in a long time a team overachieve. I didn't think Denver coming into the season was – I thought Denver was a 4-12, 5-11 team, maybe even 3-13. So the fact that they got this far was basically a minor miracle. And it got exposed with, you know, you watch Tebow, and everybody pointed, that's the same about Tebow. Everybody, when Tebow's good, when they win, Tebow probably gets too much credit. But when they get smacked around, he probably gets too much blame. That game was so much not about Tim Tebow last night. It's not even, it's ridiculous. That game was about their offense, New England's offense, destroying Denver's defense, and Denver's defense had not played well the last three or four games of the season.
Denver. I look at Denver. Denver's been one big, huge gimmick the entire season. I've enjoyed watching it. I really have.
And
have rooted for Tebow. You know. At certain points during the season, I've rooted for him. but it comes down to execution. And in all the games in which Tebow did his thing and all that happened, and, you know, even with the fluky stuff, it happened because teams didn't execute in the fourth quarter. What they ran into with New England was a team that executed their game plan perfectly on both sides of the ball. They did exactly what they wanted to. They forced they forced Team Tebow, a.k.a. Denver, to try to pass the ball on awkward downs. They put pressure on the offense by scoring on the defense, and they basically just did whatever they wanted. If you play a team, Kansas City proved it, even without an offense against Denver, if you play sound defense, if you execute the way the game plan is written and everybody stays exactly where they're supposed to stay, Denver doesn't have too much of a hope. They're too gimmicky.
Yeah. Yeah, and listen, Fox, he should have done it as far as the gimmicks. Listen, you have a quarterback that
Hello?
All right, we're back. Yes, we're back on the air. Back on the air. Oh, yeah, are you back? Yeah, we had a little call drop there. You had a quarterback in Trent Dilfer that Trent Dilfer said out of probably the 80 quarterbacks, he said there are probably 80 quarterbacks around the league, including second, third string, fourth string, whatever, that are more skilled in terms of throwing the ball than Tim Tebow. So, you know, Fox did absolutely what he had to do considering who he had playing the position. We all know that Fox and Elway never wanted Tim Tebow, you know, but this is what they had to do. This is what the cards they were dealt with. And you would be shocked if Denver does not draft a quarterback, say in the second or third round. Maybe they're not going to draft high enough to get a top quarterback, you know, one of the big two as far as, you know, obviously Luck or RG3. But if you're Denver, you have to take a quarterback in the second or third round, or go out there and get a quarterback out, whoever's out there on free agency, to compete with Tim Tebow going to next season. I don't think that you can have him as your starting quarterback next year. I think that, you know, teams, you know, the second time around, it was proven. You look at his stats against San Diego, second time around, Kansas City, New England, that the second time, once teams got more of a look at what he can do, what he couldn't do, that he just, you know, he was rendered basically powerless as far as you know, what his effectiveness. So
this is exactly how I would play it if I was John Fox. Here's what I would say to Tebow. I would be like, Tebow, look, you got one read, and if you don't see if that one read isn't open, then you run. That's what you do. Don't try to go to your progressions because it ain't working. You don't even have confidence. You can make half the throws you're looking at. You have the one read and you go. And I keep running that, and then I put pressure, and then hopefully that puts pressure on Tebow, where Tebow says, man, these guys are trying to kill me. I better learn how to throw to the spot. I better learn how to look off the safety. I better learn how to get consistent with my throws. That would be it. I would absolutely have a quarterback in the wings waiting, but, you know, the fans want Tebow and all that stuff like that. I say, okay, you want Tebow, but Tebow, you need to run. Like, don't know. We're not playing this, you know, like with other running quarterbacks like Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick. No, we're going to keep you in the pocket. You run. That's what you do. That's what you're going to do 90% of this game. You just saw Aaron Rodgers running all over the field, and he's a million times better the passer that Tebow is. Tebow should be getting 20 runs all over the place. You run until you learn how to throw. That's how I would handle it if I was John Fox.
Yeah, I see. To me, that's even going to wear. That is going to wear thin because either one, he's not going to make it physically, and two, again, teams are going to. I think NFL defenses and these coordinators and these are just too smart. I mean, they're just too. They seeing him the second time around, and the Lions have just come through. Baltimore is a 7-point favorite. New England is a 7.5-point favorite over Baltimore, and the 49ers are a 2.5-point favorite over the Giants. And that is clearly a home field thing, because that basically, when you're talking about 2.5 at home, pick'em is 3. So that basically that's
a pick'em. Yeah, so
that's like that. That is a pick. That's that is the definition of a pick'em. 2.5 at home. So, but it seems like to me they need to make a decision on Tebow. I mean, first of all, John Elway comes out and says we're committed and what have you. They need to do. They need to make, you know, bring in a quarterback coach or somebody.
Yeah,
they, I mean, they need to either he's your quarterback or he's not.
They got to coach him up.
They got to coach him up, or they go get another quarterback. They can't do this middle ground thing where, you know, we got this guy, but you know we could pull him at any time possibly, and so on and that thing. Either he's your guy, or he's not your guy. If you don't have confidence in him to be your guy, then go get another quarterback. This year they got away with it because the circumstances were, you know, Kyle Orton was struggling or the team was struggling, 1-4. Tebow, they had basically a last place schedule. They ran this year, next year they're gonna have a first place schedule. Teams have a second year around. Seeing Tebow, they're gonna trust me. Their teams right now studying film on what Tim Tebow can do and cannot do. That's just how the NFL works. So listen, like you said, they're gonna have to coach him up to the best of their ability or go get another quarterback. I don't think there can be no doubt whatsoever in that organization that he either is their guy or he's not their guy.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Tebow has to get better. They need to get better personnel around him, and they need to get a quarterback coach in there if they want to commit to him. If not, then they need to be prepared to go in a different direction. But they can't play that middle ground because they won't have the same success they had this season. They caught everybody by surprise. They caught enough teams by surprise with the gimmicky stuff that they were doing. That won't even happen next year. The entire AFC West right now is studying
film. Right now. Yeah, absolutely. That's how the NFL works. I mean, these guys are, you know, there's no off season in the NFL whatsoever. Guys, they might take a week or two for vacation, but these coaches are right back at it. You know, February 1st after the Super Bowl, these coaches are right back at it. So that's how it goes. And they're studying Tebow again. They'll be studying Tebow right away as soon as the Super Bowl is done. A couple of NFL notes, and let me get your thoughts on this. Jeff Fisher is going to be the coach of the Rams, and how it went down is kind of funny to me because apparently he turned down Miami because Miami would not give him some control over personnel decisions. Miami decides to keep Jeff Ireland, the current GM. First thing, number one, if you're Miami, would you have given Jeff Fisher personnel control, would you basically made him the GM and coach
for
the Dolphins?
It depends on how much I trust my current GM. If I feel like my current GM is able to get the job done, then no, I don't want to give a head coaching all that responsibility because, as we've seen historically in the NFL, it doesn't work out that well. You know, the best franchises have a coach and then have a GM, and those two entities work together and are, you know, constantly looping each other into all the decisions, but there's a clear delineation of responsibilities. So if I had a GM I had confidence in, then absolutely I would have I wouldn't want to give a head coach that type of power. And then it becomes on how much you value Fisher. And then obviously St. Louis is just ready just to turn the keys over to him. But yeah, if I trust my GM, then I'm not giving the head coach both powers.
So yeah, I can't blame Miami. Listen, first of all, I'm not as high on Fisher as a lot of people are. I mean, you know, 16 years, 5 playoff appearances. You know, he did make a Super Bowl. I think he's very good. I don't think he's great. So I think that, you know, I'm not treating him like he has 2 or 3 Super Bowl rings by giving him that kind of control. And I absolutely don't blame Miami for not doing that. Another thing that came about in terms of coaching, as far as coordinators goes, and this happens fast in NFL moves. Greg Williams allegedly is going to join Fisher in St. Louis, so New Orleans will have a vacancy with the defensive coordinator. That in talks that New Orleans and Atlanta are going to be battling out oversees Mike Nolan and or Mike Nolan for the defensive coordinator spots.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting. Steve Spagnuolo, that'd be definitely very interesting to see. I don't really have a comment either way on Steve Spagnuolo. What do you think?
Oh, I think it'd be. The Saints. If you can go from Greg Williams to Spagnuolo, then I think that'd be a great hire. I think Spagnuolo is absolutely at this stage, and I don't know if he's a head coach right now. Might be a little young, but he's definitely just a great coordinator. There need to be a number of teams after Spagnuolo, to be honest with you. I mean, Green Bay needs to be lined up after Spagnuolo. to be perfectly honest with you, we have a caller on the line. We'll get to this caller real quick. Caller, what's on your mind? One question, one comment.
Hey, I do. My name is Jeff from Speculation Sports, Capital Radio, whatever. I have two cream, Paul. Good evening, gentlemen. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing pretty good.
I'm doing fine.
Good. Well, speaking of general manager, being a Dallas Cowboys fan and long-suffering since they fired Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones is the imbecile of my show and I wasn't surprised we were 8-8. I said 7-9. So people keep telling me PMs that, they're sorry my Cowboys didn't make it. It's like, don't be sorry. It wasn't expected. But, on the general manager, that's a pretty touchy subject. I know Tuna, when he was with my beloved Cowboys, you want to shop and cook for your dinner. I get that, guys, but no different in a company. If us three all owned a company together, we work together, we all have the saying, and I realize Jerry Jones signs those checks and puts them in their craniums after they lose, but I think he is no general manager evaluator that I am a new dancer in Vegas. It doesn't work, and it gets to be obtuse and disgusting with my beloved Cowboys the last 17 years. I follow them through and through, but So I don't know about you guys, but I don't like the maze of mediocrity. I want the pool of prosperity, not the pool of popularity. And Jerry loves the pool of popularity. And Dallas Cowboy fans or any fans of any teams, there's one language we all speak, maybe English right now, but it's called money. And I think Jerry Jones or any team gets it when you speak that language. And the Colts, they fired the general manager. If you look at the St. Louis Rams, you look at other than fired coaches, the Miami Dolphins, and Crater Face down in San Diego is still gainfully employed. And Batty Fat 2x4, the city of brotherly shove out there, has been there for 13 years too long. And then you have the Mile High Messiah in Denver, who, in my mind, he's had a great season regardless of whatever you think of religion, because like I told somebody, I don't know, it was just on Mike Mack show, and I called those, and I said, you guys remember Reggie White from the Green Bay Packers? Do you know why he picked the Green Bay Packers? Do you know why he did it? Because God told him to. That's
Jesus
a quote,
said, yeah.
Unquote, okay? And the haters of Tim Tebow on BTR, or I don't use the word hate because that's not a good thing to have in your character, okay? As far as I'm concerned, it's never a good thing. I mean, I don't like to convict a felon out in Sea Brotherly Shell, but I respect him as an athlete, okay? And the Mile High Messiah, like I told him today, he could be holding a lighter, and people would walk up with a cup of gas and throw it on him. I'd walk up with a cigar, light it, and you have a glass of milk. I'd drink half of it and say, great season, my friend. Other people would crap in his white milk and make it chocolate and make him drink it and take the lighter and leave, okay? To me, I like prosperity. And it's amazing, you guys, in the great country of America, we drag down people that are successful. That's why I think that they want the Cowboys to be successful. They can drag down, quote-unquote, the America's team, but it's not going to happen with the imbecile of my show, Mr. Jerry Jones, owning it. But I've gone on this little rant here, but it comes down to working together. It's called a system. Regardless of what happened to the Packers today, they'll come back. We all know it's called the owner, the general manager, and the coach, and they both have to work together. If I'm the owner, I'm going to sit you two guys down and say, all right, guys, this is what I want to see. You get championships, you'll get rewarded. If you don't, I'm going to fire your ass. Plain simple. I mean, you're paid to win. It's not PB football, us re-coaching a football team, we lose, we have ice cream. This is right now in Green Bay, they're cleaning out their locker room because they got out coached by the Gigantics, the maddening team, the New York Football Giants, NFC East, beat the Bay Packers in their backyard. And they embarrassed McCarthy, got out coached by Tommy Coughlin, my old school mentality. Okay.
Without question.
I mean, he got all coached. I like McCarthy, but
no question.
Madden, New York Football Giants, I think, are on a roll. They win the Super Bowl this year, guys. They win the 46th inning because Tommy Coughlin had a gun and McCarthy brought a knife. It's just like when the Cowboys played the Giants. He should have brought a bazooka, but Romo brought a little pocket knife, and they slayed him. And that's why Tony Romo is playing golf in Hawaii right now. Why I'm talking to you. I'm sorry. The Green Bay Packers were the better team on paper, but the better team in the field won that game today. And my hat goes out and the game ball to Mr. Tommy Coughlin, because nice guys finished last. A-holes finished first in the National Football League as far as the control of violence, as I call it on my show. But I'm loving this season all year long. My Cowboys didn't get in, but I've been loving this season all year long. Tebow's rise, the Buffalo Bills, their rise, and their embarrassment fall at the end. Crater face down in San Diego. You've got the total embarrassment of the city of brotherly shove. The Philadelphia Eagles, a nightmare. It goes on and on and on. The city of brotherly shove should be embarrassed. And I'm sorry, I don't know why he's still gainfully employed. If out there in the city of brotherly shove, okay, the gritty city of Philadelphia, and crater face down in San Diego, the Hawaii of the mainland. I don't get it. I don't get it, gentlemen. I just don't get it, because you're paid to win, and you should be embarrassed. And then they fire the head. If they can fire the head coach in the Raiders, but you still have fatty 2x4 in Philadelphia, Tim Leary should be ashamed of himself, because he's not going to win. He's not going to get it done. He's been there 13 years too long. So how many more years are they going to give fatty 2x4 chances? How many more? Then the line gets 1 year older. And the convicted felon doesn't get it done. I like him. I respect him as an athlete, but he's not. He can't. He's like crystal. You look at him, he falls apart, okay? It's just, and the Eagles are just a maddening team as well. They have all that talent, and they did nothing. They're spent condoms in the NFC East, period. And it's just disgusting to watch a team in a tradition in that town get flushed right down the toilet. You take your Leary, and you wipe your Beagles and you flush it down the toilet every morning. It's just disgusting.
As always, you always bring extra spice to the program. But unfortunately,
of course,
that's why I'm on the Talk Radio Show. Absolutely, we're going to have to move on, and you get back to me. You get back to me next time, okay?
I'm boring you.
No, you're not boring at all. But we have to move. No, absolutely not. But we have to move on. We got a couple of topics that we want to get to. So hey, I want to talk about the Raiders, and I also want to preview next week's games. But as always, you get back to, and I have other callers too, who want to get in. So as always, you definitely get back to me, man. All right.
All right, man. This is Bill Clinton, man. I did not have sexual relations like that woman, Mr. Lewinsky, man. All right.
All right. Man. Take it easy.
See you guys later. Bye.
Salute.
Woo. That's a lot.
That dude is hilarious, man. I love Cal Powell. He's hilarious. He's hilarious. Now he is absolutely hilarious. He will take over your show. But with that, we love when Cal Powell calls. He's obviously a Cowboy fan. He made some great points. I mean, Cowboys, obviously, it is about Jerry Jones and, you know, what him, the Cowboys being more of a business than an actual football team. But what I want to talk about the Raiders before we preview next week's games is the Hugh Jackson thing. You look at it on the surface, and you say, okay, new general manager wants to bring in his own guy. Clear cut, simple, fine. But how it went down was hilarious, because I don't know if you saw Hugh Jackson's last press conference. The press conference at the end of the last game of the season. And he was talking like he was the man, the owner, the general manager, and the coach. He was talking like, you know, some changes are going to be made, and I'm not going to tolerate this. I'm going to look at everything. He was talking with so much conviction, and I said to myself, dude, you're not under contract for next year, though. It'd be like this. It'd be like an intern coming in to an office and saying, you know what, I want this secretary out, I want this secretary in, I want this desk, I want this new desk, I want this new table, I want this. When she don't even know she's going to have a job next week.
That's a very good analogy.
That's what Hugh Jackson was like. He was you know, the one thing when he said I'm pissed off the players, I was like, okay, cool. You know, they lose a home game to the Chargers with a playoff with a division and a playoff seed on the line. He's frustrated by that. That was understandable. But when he was talking about, you know, I'm gonna look at everything, and then when you did some more investigating, come to find out that he wanted input on the next general manager. I was like, Hugh, slow down, but like, Chief, you haven't even been hired as a coach in 2012. You slow down, Chief. You just lost. You just blew a chance of making the playoffs. You need to be a tad bit more humbler. And then it comes around, and then Reggie McKenzie comes in and says, "You know what, Hugh? You know what? It's been nice. Goodbye. I want my own guy."
I was listening to a lot of the talking heads on ESPN, and one of the things that they were saying was that Hugh Jackson had a contract, or in Hugh Jackson's contract, it said that he reported directly to Al Davis.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. You know, with Al Davis being gone, you know, it kind of leaves a rudderless ship. And, you know, the Raiders have never been the most functional franchise in the NFL with Al Davis there. It looks like they, and I forget the new GM's name, but he comes
Reggie
from the
McKenzie.
Packers organization. Yeah, McKenzie. He comes from the Packers organization.
And he seems like he has a good idea of what he wants to do from early returns. He seems like he's like, listen, I want to bring in my own guy. Now, again, for all we know, Hugh Jackson could have been out there in regards to that press conference. But I just found that funny. You know, more than likely, he probably would have been out there, even if he had come out and said all the right things. But I just found that funny that he was just talking like, you know, not only did he have a job, that he was just basically, he had other jobs. He had, you know, personnel jobs, you know, in the palm of his hands. Like, I'm going to choose who going to be here, who going to be there. So that was a funny part of that. But he probably nine times out of ten, he would have been out anyway. And McKenzie comes in with his own guy, which makes sense. I mean, listen, I talked to a Raiders fan, Dave, at the job. He says he'd rather have that than have, you know, Reggie McKenzie and Hugh Jackson arguing next year over the starting safety, something like that. So get your general manager in, new general manager coming in, bring in your own guy. And start from there. So your coach can have his own. You know, now the quarterback situation is different. Carson Palmer, who knows what happens with that? But at least McKenzie will have his own guy coming in as a new head coach coming in next year. And there've been some talks about possibly Winston Moss from the Packers. And I don't know. I don't understand this particular name, but he finds a way to keep himself in getting a head coaching job. Dom Capers from the Packers.
Yeah,
I don't understand that one. I don't get that one.
I don't get a lot of these retread coaches that I've heard the names bouncing around. You know, but I guess they've always said, and whoever they is, but you know that the NFL is a good old boys league, and
right.
You know that's true to a certain extent. These guys just keep getting passed around and passed around, and no matter how ineffective they prove at a head coaching position, they still get considered at the very least consideration.
Oh, absolutely. And now I would give Marty Schottenheimer if he wanted to coach another shot.
Yeah, I like Schottenheimer.
I think he's a high level retread. I don't think he's a basic retread. I think he's an all-star retread. And he does have about almost 200 wins. 197, close to 200 wins. I if he wanted to coach, I would give him a shot. But more than likely, I think you go with the up and coming coordinator, and I would offensive defense. You know, you raid the Packers, you raid some of these other organizations that you know have had some success, and or you just go with somebody, you know, the up and coming the coordinator who wants to, you know, it want to be a Spagnuolo or whatever, not him. Per se, he has to earn his keep back to show me that he can get another coaching job. He has to have a great defense coming next year. As far as next week goes, your early thoughts about the Giants 49ers Giants lost down there down in San Francisco earlier in the season. It was a relatively close competitive game. Eli had a couple picks against that 49 defense. Alex Smith actually played well in that game. And how about we give Alex Smith some credit? I mean, this dude, you know, I'll never be a fan of him. You know, but you gotta give credit where credit is due. Three touchdowns, no picks, 24-42, 299, and almost goes toe to toe with Drew Brees.
That was a statement game by him. I mean, that absolutely was. Like I said, I stood up and applauded, and the line is 2.5, and I understand 2.5 line, but the San Francisco 49ers have to be the odds on favorite going into that game. I came out of that game really impressed, and they have to be the favorites.
Yeah, Giants had a couple injuries. I think Deion Grant, who made the play, I think they had Canty was limping off the field. There were a couple guys that were banged up. It could change over the week. I would favor San Francisco because they, you know, obviously home field to me, I still don't dismiss home field, and I never will. Plus, going cross country, East Coast and West Coast, that's something you have to take with a factor. And that defense, that San Francisco defense is just they hit hard.
Physical.
That is the most physical defense in the league, easily. They got Auden Smith, Justin Smith, Willis is back. The secondary play. Their secondary, despite all the yards that New Orleans had, I thought the secondary played great.
Secondary played fantastic. I was joking with my brother. I saw Carlos Rogers play when he was with Washington. I had to watch a lot of Washington games and saw him play, and that's not the same Carlos Rogers that I saw in Washington. No. They are doing a fantastic job of coaching that secondary.
No, yeah, absolutely. So I would lean right now, I would lean towards San Francisco, though, you know, obviously the Giants, you know, will be right there. Eli Manning got the championship experience, Kaufman championship experience. But San Francisco, I was very impressed by what they did. To me, what they did last, you know, again, New Orleans' defense is just like Green Bay's. It's awful. Giant defense certainly will be a step up. But San Francisco showed me that their offense can do some things. And, you know, unlike Green Bay, the Giants will not push San Francisco around on either side of the ball. It's not going to happen. If the game of physicality, they will not win a game of physicality. They might win the game based on a turnover here, Eli plays out of his mind, but it will not be because they're more physical than San Francisco. I know that.
They'll be able to do a few things, but they're not going to be able to run. And then you're putting the game in Eli's hands. And Eli has proven absolutely capable this year, but, you know, it's always lurking. And that's why I said, you know, I just got to see a little bit more before I kick Eli up to that elite level, and next week will be an excellent test because that game is going to be on his shoulders. The Giants will not be able to run the ball.
They will not run against them, no. I mean, they couldn't. They didn't have much success running against Green Bay today. I mean, I know they had a big run here. I mean, Amari Bradshaw had the one big 23-yard run, but Green Bay basically stopped their run. But, yeah, they got the four turnovers. Eli played well, and it really didn't matter. But they absolutely won't run against San Francisco. And then, so with that being said, then you have Justin Smith, Auden Smith, and that front seven, which is the best in football, absolutely licking his chops, you know, with their pass rush. And they can get pressure, and they can cover, you know, with the secondary. It's going to be an interesting game. Plus, you give San Francisco the edge as far as defense to me, special teams with the kicking game. Akers in a game that could be close. Akers is I'll take Akers over Lawrence Tynes, and you give the Giants edge at quarterback with Eli. So it definitely should be a game. I'll say it definitely will be a game that goes right down to the last couple minutes, last two or three, last two possessions. How about Baltimore and New England? What's your early feel on that?
I actually have a lot to say on this game. There are a couple different things. I feel like watching that New England game, I said one of the big takeaways was like, oh, man, Belichick has his mojo back. And I say that he started the game with Aaron Hernandez in the backfield. And you could look at that defense and they were like, what is going on? That kind of that mad scientist is churning.
Like,
I think
like
part
doing
of the
Deion
reason
Branch
that they
as,
also,
as a secondary.
Yeah, I think part
choice
of the reason,
there for that.
You know, New England's getting healthy at the right time, you know, healthy enough, getting some pieces back on the defense. The defense was god-awful, and so maybe they'll just be kind of awful, you know, going into this game. But I also think, you know, they backed off, you know, partly because one of the things I feel like happened last year to the Patriots is they got completely fooled. They weren't doing anything different, and then the Jets were doing something different and then completely befuddled them. I think Belichick is coming into this playoff saying, you know what, we're going to be the ones that's going to present something new that you've never seen before, and you're going to have to readjust to that. Second thing is Tom Brady is great. As good as Baltimore's defense is, as great as Baltimore's defense is, however you want to see it, they don't fare well against great quarterbacks. Baltimore loves to say, you know, we do all these things, we show different fronts and everything like that, but I've consistently said when they look to try to beat you, kind of like man up. They try to, you know, say we're better than your team. And for most teams, our defense is better than your offense. And for most teams, that's absolutely true. But against the Peyton Mannings and against the Tom Brady's, Tom Brady is 5-1 against them. The one, I think the one being the playoff loss, which they absolutely did credit
30-14,
But against great quarterbacks, Baltimore doesn't fare so well. So I actually like this. I like the 7.5 a lot against Baltimore. I think Baltimore is going to struggle to score, and they're going to struggle to stop Tom Brady.
And listen, that's an excellent point. People, you know what he's talking about, right? Okay. Even you go back to that magical 2000 season when they had one of the great defenses of all time. I mean, you the quarterbacks that they went through to go to win that. All right, Brian Griese. For Denver, divisional round, Steve McNair, very good but not great. Conference championship, Rich Gannon, and he knocked him out. Remember, that's when Tony Siragusa fell on him, and that was it. And Rich Gannon wasn't a great quarterback, by the way. I know he was MVP 2002, but he was not great. Super Bowl, Kerry Collins, and that was when that defense. And no, yeah, we, you know, very good career, had a long and very good career, but nowhere near great. And that was with that defense was one of the greatest defense I've ever seen. I didn't see the 85 Bears. I remember them briefly, but that, in my lifetime, the 2000 Raven defense was the best defense I've ever seen in my life. Even with that said, they didn't go through a great quarterback. Even, you know, the Ravens and Pittsburgh Steelers have had the two best defenses over the past decade. The Ravens, like he said, look at Tom Brady's record against them. Look what Peyton Manning has done against them. And look what Ben Roethlisberger has done against them. Three great quarterbacks, and they struggle against all of them. So that's what he's talking about when he makes the point of them struggling against the absolute cream of the crop in terms of quarterbacks. And Tom Brady had a little extra juice last night as far as he had a little fire in his eyes. That felt like just 4 years of playoff frustration that they just let out last night on the poor Denver Broncos. That's what it felt like. 4 years of playoff frustration that they let out on the Broncos when they just manhandled them. I'm not quite ready to give Belichick his mojo back because to me, I said it earlier, that was a scrimmage last night. That was a scrimmage. So I do give Baltimore some respect in terms of they can win playoff games on the road. I do give them respect of desperation. You know, Ray Lewis not getting any younger. Ed Reed, that they might just be like, look, this could be it for us. They're going to have that sense of desperation. You know, Ray Rice definitely could hurt the Patriots if they use him, which is a big key. You know, I favor the Patriots, obviously, but I think I would lean towards taking Baltimore with the points.
Okay. Interesting.
And I think Baltimore can win the game.
If Baltimore keeps it within that 7.5 range, I think they have an excellent chance of winning the game. I will almost say if it is that close, I like Baltimore. But I don't think it's gonna be that close.
you think 10 to 14 points in that range.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
New England by 2 touches.
It definitely could happen. It definitely could happen, but I don't know. I hated Baltimore coming out of this game. I was so down on Baltimore coming out of this game, but I just seen, you know, I think what it is, people, and I'm kind of trying to tie it up in terms of what I said yesterday. Great defense versus the offense thing, you know, this alleged shift of power in terms of the great offense winning championships. Clearly, that is not the case. That is not the case as far as, you know, you still need a quality defense to win a championship. And I think that's kind of, you know, Baltimore still has a very good defense. And I think that's kind of like shifting me towards thinking that game is going to be highly competitive and Baltimore having a punchy chance to win. That's why I think, and that's where I think I'm at. Because normally I've been like Baltimore all year long. I've been down on them. They've been inconsistent. But the one thing you can say about Baltimore, again, They can win playoff games on the road. Number one, they've done it before, and they rise to the cage to the level of their particular opponent.
That they do.
This year Pittsburgh beat them twice, beat Houston twice. You know, San Francisco, who they could have beaten in the Super Bowl. How about that? How about the Harbaughs in the Super Bowl?
That would be a thing. Well, and I mean, just like the Harbaughs in the Super Bowl would be the kind of that line. But exactly with your point, if Baltimore and San Francisco make it to the Super Bowl, what does that say about this supposed new NFL? You know, that'll be an interesting, you know, storyline in itself.
I mean, I think the statement has already been made. When you have Green Bay and the Saints out, I think it's even if New England goes on to win the Super Bowl, their defense has played much better over the course of the last few weeks, and Brady is just that good. And they've been running the ball. That's one thing that's been they have committed to running the ball much more than they had prior in the first part of the season. But I think with Green Bay and New Orleans out, and those are and coming into the season, I said it for the majority of the season, I thought Green Bay and New Orleans were the two best teams in football, not just the NFC, but in all of football. And they're both, and neither one of them, you know, they win one playoff game between them. So I think the statement has been made: you need a championship caliber, you know, defense. Look at the Giants. I mean, we can talk about Eli Manning all we want. If their defense in the last 4 weeks has played great. Their defense in the last 4 weeks has absolutely played great. So I think you need a defense that's championship caliber to get to the Super Bowl and possibly and definitely to win the Super Bowl. I mean, New England can get to the Super Bowl and lose to the Giants or lose to San Francisco possibly. Or not even get there at all. But I think this season has showed us that these stats look great. On paper, these numbers look great, and you certainly want to be able to put points on the board. But when you look at the fact that Green Bay last year had, for my money, the best defense in the league as far as everything combined in terms of yards, points they allowed, and just how they played down the stretch, and 10-6, and looking at them now, 15-1, and being out the playoffs, I think that tells you all you need to know.
It's very telling. It's very, very telling.
Extremely telling. You know, that team could be 10-6, win a Super Bowl. And last year, listen, Green Bay, it is amazing. And that'll be another thing. I think a lot of things are going to come out this Green Bay loss that might have people rethinking what they do. Number one, the whole resting players, if you're fortunate to go 12-13-0, which Aaron Rodgers and folks, we're gonna go into a little overtime here, so disregard the time situation. If you look at this team and you say to yourselves, I'm bringing back JaMychal Finley, I'm bringing back this guy, Ryan Graham, bringing back that guy. It's just amazing how far their defense fell off in 1 year. It's like them and Houston did the reverse. Last year, Houston had one of the worst defenses you'll ever see. This year, they're one of the best in the league. Green Bay last year, I thought defensive was great last year. I mean, their defense, you look at their numbers across the board, how many points they gave up. I don't think they had a game where they gave up more than 15, 16 points last year. I mean, they were that good. But this year, to fall off to that level, I know Nick Collins' injury was big. I just wonder what was the reason why they fell off to that extent. And to me, that question hasn't been asked enough over the course of this season because we've been watching Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is, you know, and the greatness of the offense hit a lot of warts for the Green Bay Packers on defense. But that is definitely a question that's going to be asked or should be asked and contemplated.
Oh, it should be. And also with the fact that, you know, now these teams, and I was mentioning before, now these teams are going to have to rethink. Now, again, it doesn't happen that often, but lately it's been happening at least once a year where a team starts out 11, 12, 13, 14-0. It's been happening a lot. The rest versus Russ thing is going to have to be revisited because Aaron Rodgers, and you can talk about the drops all you want, Aaron Rodgers had 20 incompletions, and he did not look sharp whatsoever. He looked complete. He never got into a rhythm. He looked out of sync from the start of the game to the end of the game.
That offense was just in terms of where they were and what they looked like on this Sunday, it was night and day. It wasn't the same.
Yeah, that was not the same offense we watched in September, October, and November. Not even close. Not even close. And it's like, we mentioned some of the things that happened, but it's like, how did it happen so quick in terms of how they dropped off? And again, 3 weeks off, that's in the NFL, that's almost a month off. That's a long time. That's a long time to have your quarterback off. When they sat Aaron Rodgers that Detroit game, I didn't think too much of it, to be honest with you. I'm not gonna sit here and lie and say that I was second. I'm not gonna sit here and lie to the audience and say that I was screaming, saying Aaron Rodgers should be playing. I wasn't. You know, they were 14-1. I was like, okay, they're resting them. You know, so be it. They want to take a risk, and I didn't think much of it. I didn't have an argument either way. But now that I look at it, look back on it, and look at how he played, he clearly was out of sync. And listen, a half of football does make that big of a difference. You know, a half of football does make that big a difference. Just getting some reps in, getting game action, getting hit, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what their philosophy will be like, you know, going into next year. They're going to be, you know, at least as good as they were this year, you know, barring any injuries. And so they're probably going to be presented with a similar situation. We'll see if they reverse Phil. You know, Belichick likes to do it the opposite way. I'm going to keep Tom Brady in every game until the game is basically over. You know, I don't care what we are. You know, and that's one way to look at it.
That's worked.
One way to handle it.
That idea.
It's worked for them,
Belichick.
Yep.
It's absolutely worked for them. They can lose that Giants Super Bowl because they were rusty. They lost them because the Giants defensive line was just that good. And they got worn down from the whole undefeated thing. But that wasn't because of rust. I mean, they were sharp and they just got worn down, got exposed as far as not having a running game. And that's another thing, too. You know, defense and run the football, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt in terms of running the football. You can talk about all this passing. I still want to be able to run the football.
Yeah, good running game. Well, like you said, with Baltimore, I mean, it's you know, as you know, I have several points against them, but you just can't discount a good defense and a good running game, you know, balanced out with a, you know, a physical offensive line. That you can take that on any condition, whether it be cold weather, warm weather, out in the parking lot, you know, wherever, on the moon. If you have a good running game and a good defense, you're going to be in every game.
And that's why you have to give. That's why you have to give. You know what San Francisco has done. I mean, they, you know, they do. And Houston to a lesser, to Houston to an extent too. I mean, Arian Foster today was just ridiculous.
An
I mean,
animal.
He was like. That's why I'm saying Houston. You know, and I'll get to San Francisco real in a second. Houston, you have to be just wondering. You know what could have been in terms of their season because they. I mean, that running game, that defense. It was championship caliber. There's no question about it. Matt Schaub, before he got hurt, was playing well. You know, they to me, and we said it earlier in the season, November, October, late October, November, before Schaub got hurt. Like this team looks like a team that can get to a Super Bowl. And I think as far as they made it in the playoffs and how well they played Baltimore, there's no question to me. That they go into next year as one of the legit top five favorites to get to the Super Bowl. I don't think there's any question about it.
They need to keep Wade Phillips.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, there's no question. And yeah, Wade, the job he did. There's some guys who are coordinators versus head coaches. Phillips is a coordinator. He absolutely is a coordinator. It's in his blood. Dom Capers is a coordinator. I know Green Bay's defense had a rough year this year, but he's a coordinator. Greg Williams, those guys are coordinators. Those guys are coordinators. I mean, Romeo Crennel, who knows what he does with Kansas City the second time around, but we know for sure that he's a coordinator. We know that for sure.
Yep.
So,
Wade Phillips, if you're listening, go through the head coaching. It won't turn out well. Really good lane, and, you know, yeah, you'll be one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl with that defense.
This is the NFL Wrap-Up Show. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, doing some overtime here as we talk about the divisional playoff round. Certainly outside the Denver Patriot debacle, a very fulfilling weekend of football, I would think. You had a classic in San Francisco, one of the better divisional games that you will ever see. You had the shock at Lambeau Field with Green Bay going out. And you had a pretty good game with Houston and Baltimore.
Yep.
But we began the program talking about the Giants. And before you came on, I was like, you know, the Giants, this is what the Giants do as far as taking out these heavyweight teams. To think about beating San Francisco back in the day.
New England.
You know, they do it to the Packers twice in 4 years.
It's a workman's mentality over there in Giants land. You know, they take on the kind of the personality of their head coach. You know, they're just gonna outwork you. And against a lot of these, much flashier and flashier teams that, they just outwork them. You know, Eli, you know, that defensive line, even that running game to a certain extent, they're just going to kind of just out-grit you. And that's what they do.
Yeah, no question about it. And they made a habit of doing this over the course of the last, going back to Parcells. Now moving into the Carson era. Of course, Carson and Parcells are the almost spirit images of each other. I mean, in terms of the toughness, just holding players accountable, no nonsense. I mean, Parcells is a better coach, but Carson, every time we want to fire Carson, Carson will not die. Carson's like that dude. He's like Rasputin. We have Kaufman fired every year. and he finds a way to keep his job. Now you have to give him a two-year extension.
I was going to say, I was going to say, you know, like Jason or Freddie or Michael Myers.
Kaufman is the absolute Halloween character. He just, I mean, he just won't, he won't go away. He will not go away. He refuses to go away. Like, if I'm going to leave, I'm going to leave. I'm going out on my, I'm going out on my own terms. He will not fire me. And, you know,
yeah.
Listen, if teams, when they're good, when they are good, and when they, you know, when they're into it, now we've seen, you know, a couple of years they didn't make the playoffs, besides 25 interceptions last year. We've seen them, we've seen them struggle at times, but when they come up against these big games, when they have big games, and they normally show up and play well, even when they lose in big game situations. And we've seen that with the past in the Tom Coughlin era, and we've seen that with the Giants for the most part. In their history now, that 2000 Ravens season, you know, Ravens were just that much better, and they made it to the Super Bowl. So, but for the most part, the Giants have come up big, and they came up big today by taking out the Packers, 37-20, ending the Packers' bid for a second straight Super Bowl championship. The Packers will be back next year. If you're a Packers fan, you know, you were spoiled for the past year and a half. The Packers fixed the defense a little bit. Aaron Rodgers is back. The Packers, matter of fact, I would say the Packers will even go in next year as odds on favorite to win it all. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. There'll be no, you know, nothing that would indicate that there'll be any type of significant drop-off. You know, you still have Aaron Rodgers, and we know what a great quarterback will do. It'll keep you in the hunt, you know, in pretty much every season that they're playing at that high level. Odds on favorite. Yeah, I'm with it. Them, New Orleans, you know, depending upon what San Francisco does, you know, they'll be right there.
I mean, do you think about it? Their defense can't play any worse.
No.
I
hope not. I don't know. I don't know what that would look like, but I don't think I want to see it if they can play worse.
Their defense cannot play any worse, and you know you get to, you know what they'll do. They'll, you know what the Packers were this year? They were similar. They were similar to what the Rams were in 2000. You know, Rams won the Super Bowl in 99, 2000. They come back and set all these records offensively. And, you know, they, you know, Kurt Warner does get hurt, but he comes back, wasn't the same. They go into playoffs and lose in the first round to New Orleans with an awful defense. And then they come back 2001, of course, with a defense much improved, get to the Super Bowl and lose a classic against New Orleans. Against New England. I could definitely see the Packers doing something like that. Getting some new people, get some new parts on defense. They'll have Collins back. Clay Matthews, they said, was not healthy for the most part over the course of the season. His play slipped a bit compared to what it was last year. So, you know, you get some new pieces. You get Nick Collins back, and you get just maybe a new approach. Because I don't know what, you know, Don Capers. I don't know what adjustments they were making or what they were not making, but it seemed like they were comfortable. I think they kind of got drunk on themselves as far as the offense. I didn't see many adjustments over the course of the year. It seems like they were comfortable in giving up a ton of yardage, and they kind of maybe all the turnovers they were forcing were kind of like fool's gold. They were just maybe too dependent on all those turnovers that they were accumulating or causing.
Yes, it can definitely be, you know, turnovers always. You want a defense, and that's also part of the thing that impressed me about San Francisco. It's always hard to account for turnovers and make that a part of your defensive philosophy. Like, yeah, we're going to go in and we're going to get four or five turnovers. You just don't know from game to game. And
right.
That can always be fool's gold. But what was so impressive about San Francisco is you could just see why they got so many turnovers. They would just
they
answer
the ball.
For that ball, just ripping and stripping, at, you know, all the time. So maybe outside of San Francisco, you can't game plan for that.
And the difference between San Francisco and Green Bay, obviously, was, I mean, San Francisco actually is not dependent on turnovers. Like San Francisco can actually stop you from gaining yardage. They can actually stop you from running the ball. They actually had a quality pass defense. So they actually don't – I mean, the turnovers are actually were a bonus, and it helped them a lot. But San Francisco can actually don't – they actually were, you know, top five in terms of total yards given up. So they weren't the turnovers aided in terms of how dominant their defense was this year, but it wasn't something that they depended on. Like, you know, either – like, we can stop you without the turnovers. Like, we're not giving up 500 yards and counting on 4 or 5 turnovers. Like, we can only force 1 or 2 turnovers and give up, you know, 250 yards or barely 300 yards. That's why I get – that's what San Francisco was this year as far as in terms of the kind of defense they played. And you can't – like you said, you can't depend on those turnovers – you know, against, especially against, as you know, as the year goes along, as you get further into the playoffs, against teams that are not going to turn over the football, teams that are going to take care of the football, you might only get 1 turnover, you might not get any turnovers. So you got to be able to, you know, force 3 and outs and stop people and what have you. And again, it was just mystifying that Green Bay could not, you know, defense just fell off the cliff. From where they were last year. What are your thoughts on the whole Sanchez thing in New York? A lot of talk about that this week. Before you wrap up, what are your thoughts on, you know, him basically being thrown through the bus, over the bus, under the bus, around the bus?
Yeah, just the bus just being backed up over him and then exploded on him. Yeah, man, you know. Here's what the thing is, and me and you, we've talked, you know, at different points in time about this. They've tried to fit Sanchez. He's a square peg, and they've tried to fit him in the round hole being a franchise quarterback, you know. And Rex Ryan has tried to sell, he's tried to sell Sanchez that he's, you know, he's a franchise quarterback. And he's not it, and that's what it is. And you're getting people, you know, but I will say this even before, you know, I finish up my comment on that. That unnamed source in talking about, you know, your quarterback like that, you know, regardless of how your quarterback is, that's some punk stuff. That really is. But anyways, I digress. Sanchez isn't that good, and that's where you're getting the feedback from, or the backlash from. He's not that good, and that simply is what it is. And Rex Ryan can't fool anybody anymore just by talking, just by saying he is, just by saying it. It's not the case.
And I'll say this. First of all, Nick Manigault came out. Spoke up for Sanchez. Sound like Rex Ryan now. Sanchez. Pentagon, his center came out and said, look, the guys are the hardworking people on our team. You know, he's with the coaches. He does this, he does that. So have you, you know, if you got a problem with him, put your name on it. He spoke to what you just said about the unnamed source. And I wouldn't be surprised if that unnamed source is Santonio Holmes.
Yeah.
And the Penny and Thompson came out today on Countdown on the four letter network and said that, you know, again, Sanchez works hard. He says, you know, it's going to be friction on every team that has 53 grown men, different personalities. He said that, you know, yeah, at times he struggled and what have you, but his work ethic certainly should not have been in question. You know, just didn't have a good year, but he's not to blame. You know, point the finger at him, and I echo those sentiments. I mean, I've heard good things about his work ethic, and he's done this, he's done that. But the problem is, when people see you, it's that whole thing we talk about a lot, just in life, in terms of the perception versus reality. When people see you on, you know, GQ magazine, you know, you get all this acclaim before you've actually won anything. Jealousy comes out. And then you get the haters on your team who think they should be making that New York media market, media money or whatever, you know, celebrity type money. But so that, you know, that feeds itself when you haven't won anything and you're out there in, you know, the clubs or whatever, or just out there on, you know, out there in terms of on the Broadway. I mean, he went to a play, a Broadway play or something. They made a big deal like last year or something. It's nothing. It had nothing to do with his performance. He's just out there. I mean, again, he's young, you know, he's young. Women like him. He's in New York. So it's, you know, being a quarterback, young and in New York, it's gonna be that perception that he's partying all the time, that he's doing this, doing that, that commercial, that commercial. And when you struggle, now all of a sudden you're lazy. Or you don't work.
I was gonna say, which is fine when you win, you know, that's, they idolize Joe Namath.
Oh yeah, when you win, that's the greatest thing ever. Yeah.
You know.
Right.
But
way, Joe, you, yeah.
That's great when you win, but he's not winning, you know, and he's not that good, and that's exactly what we see.
I wonder how, you know, Sperano would do with him as the offensive coordinator. They're very high on Sperano. He's one of their first choice to be the offensive coordinator. I'm not even ready to call Sperano a great offensive coordinator, but I wonder what Sperano can get out of him.
Yeah, I don't have high hopes. I'll just say that much. I just told you, he's just not that good. I mean, just honestly, we're trying to make him into something he's not. Not we. They are trying to make him into something he's not. He's not that good. He needs everything around him. That team needs to be fully loaded. If they're fully loaded and that defense is clicking, then Sanchez can be a competent quarterback and manage the game, as we see with what's going on in San Francisco. But without that, he's not going to make plays. When everything breaks down, he's not going to lead you back, you know, from 14 points down and all that stuff. He's just not that good.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't listen when they traded up to get him with the fifth pick. I said, after what, 2 years at USC, I was like, okay. I was like, we'll see. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't excited. I saw him with all American wide receivers and running backs and offensive linemen. But I didn't. Again, he didn't jump out to me coming out the draft. And it went. They gave up some. You know, they traded up to get him. You know, he wins a couple playoff games that with a very good defense, with a top notch running game. Like you said, everything. It seems like everything does have to be perfect around him. I think the Jets' problem is Rex Ryan's too focused. Just he's similar to Buddy Ryan in terms of he's just in love with his defense that you know he doesn't realize that there is a second. There's an offensive side of the ball that you actually need to put some points on the board. Just you know, his defense, and you know that's their particular problem. So that's gonna wrap it up for this latest edition of the NFL Wrap Up Show. As always, Mr. Sapp, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, sir.
And I'm hoping next week that we can get Mr. Quinn, the other Mr. Quinn, on because it's gonna be very interesting. The 49ers. In it, there'd be some great radio to get a 49er reaction either way, whether they win or lose. I guarantee you this: if they win, he will be on. I guarantee that. I can guarantee that. If they lose, it's 50-50. If they win, it's 99, you know, out of 100 times, out of 99% that he'll be on. So we'll see if we can get Mr. Quinn on. He couldn't make it, but. Filling in for him co-starring with me, Mr. Sapp, as always, thanks for coming on. We'll see you next time.
Pleasure.
All right, take it light, man. So that's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the NFL Wrap-Up Show. We go 2 hours, and I told you we probably do some overtime here. As always, you can catch the replay on blogtalkradio.com/TheRealQuinn. Our next show will be the Saturday morning wake-up call next week. A time has yet to be determined on that. I'm thinking probably 11 a.m., 10:30, but I'll let you know over the course of the week. You can catch the opening of this show. I'm gonna try to get it on my website before the night is out at TheRealGeraldQuinn.com. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening. Have a great evening. And, hey, celebrate Martin Luther King Day. It's just not a day off. So we remember the late Dr. Martin Luther King for everything he's done. So celebrate that day. Enjoy your holiday weekend. I'll see you next time.